It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Some vertical farms face economic troubles. We assess the challenges and opportunities of vertical farming in Wisconsin with LED grow lights and nutrient solutions, green stacked on vertical shelves, no soil. Call in with your questions about this type of farming, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Brian Ernst is founder of Ernesse Farms in Ripon. Brian, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, give us a little bit of a taste of your operation here, a vision in our mind's eye. Walk us through your operation.
Yeah, so we just recently expanded into a former grocery store. Our grow operation is 21,000 square feet. Our main grow room, we are able to stack our grow levels on top of each other, and we're able to go seven layers high. And so all of our crops are grown hydroponically. So we use no soil. All the plants receive their nutrients through a customized nutrient solution that I developed. And one of the great things about our operation is obviously we don't have to worry about growing seasons. And so right now where it's freezing cold outside, and a couple of days ago when we had, 7 inches of snow, we're out here still producing basil and other culinary herbs, mushrooms, microgreens, and we're able to do that year round.
Isn't it ironic you're in an old grocery store?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, one of the best parts about it is when I was in high school, this used to be a Piggly Wiggly and I used to work here. And so now we own the building and we crawl our plants here. So
your life is coming
good circle,
full
yeah.
circle.
Exactly. Absolutely.
So you produce, herbs, microgreens, you've got mushrooms going on. How do you decide what to grow?
Whatever the demand is. And so, one of the things with vertical farming, obviously, you kind of hinted at it in your intro there. There's a steep upfront cost to getting to the market. And so we typically try to pick products that are, have a little bit higher selling price to justify all of those inputs that we have to put in. But there are just certain types of plants and crops that are really well suited to be grown indoors.
So what are those upfront costs like? I mean, in terms of the grow lights and the solutions and the shelving and warehousing and energy to keep it all going, what is the impact?
Yeah, so I mean, it's definitely a steep upfront cost getting into the industry, right? And so obviously, we're not able to provide all that sunshine that regular agriculture and other CEA operations get for free. Now, that can be a problem, or it could also be a benefit. And so with our grow lights, we have them custom made for us. And so we give the plants only certain wavelengths of light that they actually need for photosynthesis. So we save electricity that way. But it's certainly a energy intensive industry, right? And so even though we're here in Wisconsin, it's cold outside. Well, in order to grow inside, we still have to regulate all those temperatures. And so, we have obviously elevated HVAC costs and dehumidity pieces of equipment that we need to be using. But all in, when you look at the other inputs that traditional agriculture has, right, the amount of fuel for the tractors and all the transport distances, it's really, a wash. The problem is, with our industry, the costs are up front rather than really, as much ongoing throughout the season.
Talking about indoor farming with Brian Ernst, indoor farmer based in Ripon, you can join the conversation with your questions and your experiences growing indoors. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Brian, you mentioned you created a specific nutrient solution that works for your indoor farming needs. And I'm just curious, how much tech or computer-aided devices are in your operation to, adjust lights and adjust temperature and, humidity, other things to optimize growing?
Yeah, we try to optimize absolutely everything we do, right? And so, again, we don't have some of those benefits that they have out in nature, right, with positive airflow and nice warm temperatures. And so we use a ton of sensors, a ton of automation. Some of the stuff we purchase from other companies, but the majority of it is stuff that we've developed in-house. And so when we started the company 7 years ago, or almost 8 years ago now, You know, a lot of the stuff didn't exist. It was a very new industry. So CEA, or controlled environmental agriculture, has been around for a while. So you think greenhouses and even hydroponic growing has been around for a while. But the idea of stacking all those grow levels on top of each other indoors is relatively new. And so when we first started the business, we had to develop a lot of the stuff ourselves. And so, you know, we bought 3D printers, I taught myself CAD and programming, and we just went out and, you know, if something didn't exist, we had to make it. And so we try to automate as much as we possibly can here to remain efficient and competitive with other field grown products.
Where do you find your customers?
So our first customers were Festival Foods and some other smaller local grocery stores. And it was really just getting out there, beating the pavement and meeting with produce managers and explaining why our products were better, and, you know, explain that we weren't going to have the supply issues that traditional agriculture would have. And, you know, once we got into a few grocery stores, it really took off from there when word was able to spread to the other produce managers about our products.
What about organic or non-genetically modified seeds? How does that work in vertical farming applications?
Yeah, so you can still use soil in traditional, or I'm sorry, in vertical farming. You know, we find that it allows more or an increased likelihood that you could have types of contamination. And so that's one of the reasons why we choose to go strictly hydroponic and use no soil, right? And so we are able to nearly eliminate any risk of Listeria or E. coli into our system simply by not using the soil. Now, there are still ways to organically hydroponically grow your product. But, you know, we're reaching that point in the industry where I think consumers are getting a little, tired or exhausted from seeing everything labeled as organic. And especially when some of the things that people buy in the stores are being labeled organic, but they're coming from Colombia or they're coming from Thailand, it really kind of calls into question the certification process. And so, you know, we're kind of entering this post-organic part of our business operation where consumers are just more concerned with knowing where their food comes from and how it's grown. And so while there is nothing wrong with genetically modified seeds, you know, we don't use any genetically modified seeds, no herbicides, pesticides. I would even argue that we follow the organic certification stricter than, you know, some organic growers. And so just letting customers know that that's how we grow the product and where it's coming from, and that it's, you know, fresh. We deliver all of our stuff next day after it's harvested. You know, that's going to be more important than just a logo on a label.
Oh, that's interesting. Let's bring on a call. John in Richland Center. John, hi. What would you like to bring up?
Yeah, I would like to ask Brian about his light bill, because the advent of LED lights, you can save 90%, and he has 140,000 square feet of growing space. And the spectrum is white light, red light, and ultraviolet. Where does the LED lights fall in?
John, thank you. Brian.
Yeah, so all of our lights that we use are custom LED lights. And so we're only giving the plants certain wavelengths of light that they need, which happen to fall into the red and the blue spectra. And so, you know, we give those our plants at certain wavelengths and a specific ratio as a way to trick the plants into constantly thinking it's spring. So we refer to that as biomimicry, right? And so we're always trying to trick the plants into thinking it's spring, whereas on the other side of our building, when we're growing the mushrooms, we're always trying to trick the mushrooms into thinking it's fall. And so we definitely see a lot of energy savings using the LED lights. However, I mean, it's definitely a lot of energy input. And so in our grow room alone, we probably have over 3,000 LED grow lights. And so, and those, while they are more efficient, still produce quite a bit of heat that does have to be reused. And so we try to duct that throughout the building to save on other energy costs. And so there's still a little bit of a technological leap that has to happen there to make LEDs a little more efficient, a little more cheaper, and to, you know, bring some of those other associated costs that most people don't think of, like the HVAC costs that play into it. You know, if we can get those down, then it'll really take off, I think.
Brian Ernst founded a vertical farming operation 8 years ago in Ripon. Colin, with your questions about the expanding indoor farming industry, what vertical farming means for our state, the number to join in with your questions and comments, it's 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We examine the innovations and the challenges of growing crops vertically indoors in less space and no soil, and what it means for Wisconsin ag moving forward. Thanks to Nina in Madison for suggesting we discuss vertical farming during a caller-only program, telling us what she hopes to grow.
Strawberries and fruits and vegetables and other healthy foods that can possibly be given out on a large scale to people in need.
And thanks to Jeff in Superior, who echoed sentiment having been on a tour of a farm in Ashland. Colin, with your questions, your comments about vertical farming, 800-642-1234. Brian Ernst runs an indoor farm in Ripon. Brian, let's talk about labor. As you are growing and harvesting all year long, how does the labor cost of indoor farming compare to outdoor row farms, row crops?
Yeah, so one of the technological challenges that still hasn't been solved for us is there is, there's no version of the indoor farming tractor, right? And so everything has to be harvested by hand. And so that is a high labor kind of operation. Now, we're investing in some technologies to give us some more automation that'll help with the harvesting and the packaging. But, it is a labor-heavy industry. And so thankfully, we've always been able to find enough work. I think people are real excited when they, hear about what we're doing and they see those bright pink glow of our grow lights and they want to, get in on the ground floor of a growing industry. But it's certainly, one of the challenges that, as an industry, we're still working to solve.
I wonder, is the USDA supportive of indoor farming, like with grants and cooperative agreements? What is the relationship like with federal programs?
Yeah, so again, being such a new industry, it's really taken several years for people to, start paying attention really to it. And so just in recent years, we have seen more grants by the USDA, the Farm Service Agency, towards expanding research into vertical farming, other co-ops. So there's certainly been more participation from some of those agencies than when we first started. It almost seemed, like people were kind of writing it off. And as people were able to see just how much produce that we're able to put out, they really started thinking, maybe we should start investing in some of these guys and seeing how far we can push this. And so recent years have definitely been much better for some of those programs.
You've talked about how much you've had to create on your end and invent. Do employees need higher ed or some non-traditional skills to farm indoors?
I mean, we certainly employ some more higher education individuals here. We have some biologists on our staff, but being such a new industry, we're able to really kind of train people from the ground up. And so as an industry, we're all still writing our own SOP books, right? So as technology is changing and as we try different procedures and techniques, we're able to rewrite our SOP Bibles. And the nice thing about having such a new industry and with processes constantly evolving is there really doesn't need to be, someone coming in with all kinds of technological experience. Now, certainly, I mean, it would be fantastic if we had a software engineer on staff and we do have several college students that are grad students and other computer science majors that are helping with some of those programmings. But, just anyone who has a passion for plants and has a passion for food, this is the type of industry for them.
Let's take another call now. Buzz is with us in Fish Creek. Buzz, hi.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Brian. Interesting show. What you do is amazing. I'm very much into it. You know, I thought about this for a while, and there was an interesting question previously on the LED light source, and it kind of jumped my reptilian brain to, what about HVAC? Are you guys looking at or using currently any sort of wind power or solar power kind of things to defray the cost?
Buzz, thank you. What about solar and wind in terms of energy inputs there, Brian?
Yeah, so currently we're not employing any solar or renewable energy on our roof. You know, it's definitely something we're interested in pursuing in the future. But you know, unfortunately, our energy costs are quite high, and so we would have to cover a lot more than just our roof with solar panels in order to generate enough electricity to completely pay for all of our lights. Now, I mean, any kind of offset would be beneficial, but you know, with the government grants that they have right now for solar, it's still pretty cost prohibitive. And so it's definitely something we'd be interested in pursuing in the future, though.
Talking about indoor farming with Brian Ernst, indoor farmer based in Ripon. You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. You know, what about as you looked at California and other big, big agriculture states using up a lot of land for agriculture, how are you able to find your place in agriculture, in the industry, as local indoor farms can't compete at the same scale?
Yeah, so we definitely can't compete at the same scale, but growing the majority of our nation's lettuce in California is just strictly not sustainable. You look at all the crisis they're constantly having out there with the water, constant recalls that we're having with romaine lettuces. It's just not sustainable. And so vertical farming is never going to compete with traditional agriculture crop for crop, right? So we're never going to be able to grow the nation's supply of corn. And so what vertical farming can do is we can take some of those other crops that are easy to grow, that are currently being grown in unsustainable ways out in California, right? And we can grow those close to urban centers where we won't have to deal with some of those same issues that they're having. And so then that land that is used to grow some of those other crops can then be repurposed for other things, and to grow different crops that are maybe better suited for that geographic area in the country. And so while we'll never replace traditional agriculture, vertical farming definitely has its place for growing leafy greens that just can't be competed with.
You started out by experimenting with indoor farming in your own basement before opening this operation. How will your farm fare long term? Because when I think of farming operations, I think of generations after generations.
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting point. I always had to preface that, you know, statement when they say that you were growing hydroponically in your basement, I always had to remind them it's not that kind of basement hydroponic growing. But it was more of a research and development hydroponic growing. But yeah, that's interesting. You know, I mean, I do have three children, and they've all expressed interest in wanting to, you know, come work at the farm. And my son has come and helped on packaging day sometimes during Thanksgiving and Christmas when we've been shorthanded. But, you know, specifically my kids, they view it from an engineering standpoint. And so, you know, they get to see dad come to work every day and design stuff on his computer and print it out and then, you know, program and build robots. And so when you ask my kids, like what we do at work, and, you know, they'll say, you know, my dad makes robots at work, right? And so it's very interesting. And so as technology continues to progress, I think there's just gonna be more and more things that can be built and designed for this industry.
Okay, we're out of time, but I just have to ask you, the omakase berry, is it worth it?
Oh, absolutely not. Who wants to spend that much money on a strawberry? that is one of the challenges, right? And so you have to be able to price your products. I mean, we have people ask us all the time, can you grow this? You can grow that. And the answer is always, yeah, absolutely, I can grow that, but I'm not sure you're going to want to pay what I had to charge to make it worth it. And so finding that right balance, right, for that consumer experience and for profitability is a delicate dance for sure.
Brian, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Brian Ernst owns Ernesse Farms in Ripon. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.